This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, listeners. Friendly reminder that we now have a Patreon. If you like what you hear, you can support the pod. Each week, we release video casts of the episodes, mini bonus episodes, reviews of clips submitted by subscribers, behind-the-scenes content, merch discounts, thirst traps, and more. Support our work for as low as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/girlsonporn. Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Laura.
I'm Rachel.
And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything. It's an exciting episode.
It is. It's been a while since we've had a guest, so it's really, really fun to be able to bring on an actual porn performer.
Ooh.
We're so stoked to have Nat Portnoy on with us. If you guys don't know, Nat Portnoy is an actress, artist, and filmmaker who has been active in the European adult scene for 11 years, mostly under the umbrella of alternative porn. In recent years, she has been exploring the connections of sensuality, religion, shame, and freedom. Nat, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey. And what great topics to kick off with. Freedom, shame, porn, all of these things.
Favorites. I think it's closer to porn than people actually think.
Yes.
It's a cycle, but we get more into it during the podcast. And I'm really honored to be on this podcast today. I've been listening to you folks for a long time.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's where I go when I want to go to my happy place.
Oh, that's so cheerful.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
That genuinely brings us joy because we're such fans, and we hope to be advocates for the space itself. So it's actually really incredible to hear that as a performer inside of the industry in a deeper way than we are, that you listen to it.
Yeah.
That's really sweet.
I think there's not enough actually the reviewing of porn.
Mm.
There is a lot of affirmation, like porn performers are getting a lot of appreciation and admiration and shoutouts, but which is good. But I think maybe this is more of a perspective of a contemporary artist, that we also need feedbacks, and we need to be able to look at the creations from like critical thinking perspective to make it better and to stay up to date.
That's helpful to hear, because sometimes we feel like dicks like when we're too harsh on stuff. It's nice to hear that it's an art form, so critique is invited, and like dialogue and all of that discourse is helpful.
I don't think there's enough people who think of porn as an art form.
No.
That's exactly what we're getting at. I think
and it is.
And it isn't always. There's plenty of porn out there that I wouldn't qualify as art. But, the same way there's an art-entertainment intersection in Hollywood, there certainly is in porn.
Yeah.
Nowadays, people call art lots of different things. You have people who create illustrations, and they are called artists. And I'm a kind of a dick when it comes to things like that. Because I think definitions are made for the reason, and it does help us understand the nature of different mediums. And I know that in porn, this is also difficult, because I myself took part in shootings that are of all kinds. And from this natural, non-scripted, no makeup. This is the kinky stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
this kind of porn, then through narrative, scenography, costumes, creations with, for example, Erika Last. So, it can be very different. And then some people also who you hosted in the podcast create this artistic experimental porn. It's almost like video art that is using sexuality as a medium to express some things. And this is something that I think is really interesting when it crosses the borders of definitions and actually it becomes something different for every person, mm-hmm. and it leaves to the audience to decide what it does for them.
Mm. Yeah, it leaves it open to interpretation.
Also, because I do hate this elitist approach of art and film and everything, that it will be understood only for the circle of people that are in this scene.
Yes.
And this is something ultimately amazing about porn, that it is democratic. Democratic.
Yeah.
Everyone has desires.
Yes.
And it could be also desire to leave them alone, but still. So people can relate to the idea of sexual encounter, even if they don't have certain fetish.
Yeah.
I feel like porn is so accessible in the definition. I mean, then you should also pay, but that's a different story.
Yeah, we do advocate for paying for your porn, but there are ways, like there's a sort of spectrum of ethics to consume it for free too.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how you got into porn and where you land on that spectrum from like porn to art, or how arty your porn is, and like what that journey was?
Okay. Wrap yourself and prepare some snacks. Because we're going to camp now. You're going to stay in your rooms for a while. No, I will try to be quick. So, maybe I should tell you that I actually hated porn for a really long time.
Oh. What were some of your first experiences with porn? Like, what did you... Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, it was something different than I expected, of course. So I was maybe more than hating, I was scared of porn because I was interested in sexuality. As a kid, I did experience arousals and as any other person, maybe a little bit more. So there was a curiosity, but then it was confronted with the situation where I was in primary school and maybe I was 10, 11, and we had a IT class and the teacher went for a break. The naughty boys from the class were watching something on a screen. I couldn't see. I had to go through the crowd. I wanted to know what everyone is so excited about. Yeah. And it was this mainstream porn of an actress lying there with her legs apart. And then a bald guy was pushing his head in.
Mm.
And I got terrified and also kind of nauseous. But I had this assumption that sex, I mean, not all sex is like that, but it's probably about extremes, about really being ready to go full on gross. And that it probably hurts. So I decided here and then that I'm just going to be one of those people that don't have sex. It's good. It's fine. I'm going to read about it. I'm going to watch films, but I'm just not going to have sex. And it kind of influenced my interest because I started collecting like vintage porn magazines because still I was interested in porn, and I actually have loads cool magazines and like albums. They
are
all
gorgeous.
From like 70s and it's like they are from different countries and like 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s I already treat as like, that was already not the same magic.
Yeah, something switched. Yeah.
And I was really interested in the aesthetic, but also in the way people express their sexuality. And if they have fetish, why? And what drives this fetish? And I was also diving into psychology and the determinism. So like somebody experienced something in a childhood, used to watch their mom feet and fancy shoes and then the foot fetish. So it was all something very interesting for me. And I would talk about this a lot. And my friends would say like, you should go into porn. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. This is my passion. I'm a nerd. It would compromise my intellect. I was a bit of a snob as well. But at one point, needed money.
Sure.
And I actually had like a, midlife nervous breakdown. And I realized all the life I had, this perfect student, girlfriend of a guy who has a kid, perfect daughter, like everyone expected this roles from me and that it was all bullshit. And it had to collapse because I was repressing a lot and I was also scared because people were calling me a slut and nymphomaniac. So I had to keep it all down and pretend that I'm not really having all those needs and that I also am not queer, which I am. So a lot of stress and pressure. So once I had this breakdown, I dropped out of the university.
Yeah.
But it was a conscious decision. I realized like this is all something I need to leave behind and start fresh. And I started fresh with porn. And I was lucky enough or privileged that by that time we already had those companies that usually it's a team of women, like camera people are women, and companies that you also mentioned on this podcast in Berlin. So this is also a privilege of the European porn scene, that mainstream is not really that popular. It's popular to watch it because people can Google it up for free. But when it comes to production, nobody really knows where those productions, at least at the time, it was not sure where they are taking place. But my first shoot, I thought I'm ready in terms of my Catholic trauma, because this is how I call it. I'm an atheist, so I thought I, you know, left it behind, but you never really do.
There's sometimes something there that's like buried. You're like, I have some Catholic stuff to deal with that I feel like I left it behind, but like it's still kind of haunting me, even if I've rejected that life. Yeah, absolutely.
You have like Italian roots?
Both of us do.
Both of us are, yes. And I talk about that a lot. Yeah, that I'm like, there's like something in my DNA that makes me so horny, you know, that I just like, I can't fight.
And it's like generations of Catholic, like repressed sexuality stuff.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like this Catholic trauma residue. It's always there with you in the back of your head. And it was a solo, so it was very light in some ways. And and then I received money. So that was
nice.
We didn't have transfers yet. And it was so much money that I couldn't fit it into my poor person wallet. So I was stressed. I felt like I should go home. So I took it in and I put it in my coat and I just went home, but I forgot to get a ticket. There was a controller. He asked me about ticket. I burst in tears because I felt everyone knows. Everyone knows. Yeah. It was just like this. Like Philip Roth writer have this satirical, grotesque paranoia. The feeling that everyone knows and this is the one-way street and I will never be able to go back. But then I slept for 14 hours and I was fine. Like, I woke up and I'm like, I love it.
Yeah.
Let's do more.
Wow.
So I think this was like the beginning of my not only sexual liberation from those stereotypes that people want to fit women in. And this also saying kind of goodbye to some ideas that I never really supported, like becoming a mother and wife. I mean, I still could theoretically, but it was never really there. That's why I always laugh when people ask, what if your kids will bump onto your porn in 10 years or 20 years? I'm like, I don't think it's going to be on the internet still. People kind of overestimate. But still, But they will know that this is material, audiovisual material. And I think by then, with the popularity of OnlyFans, it will be chill.
Yeah, exactly.
If we keep doing the Lord's work, which is to destigmatize porn and sex work, and we better educate our kids from go about like porn literacy and sex in general, then I think it's perfectly suitable for a kid to be aware of their parents' journey. But it sounds like you don't have kids, so like why stress it right now?
Exactly. And like that's not to say that there are plenty of porn performers who do have kids and they're fine.
Yeah, exactly. It is happening. This is not something but if they ask as this would be some very isolated incident, like people do have kids. There are plenty of sex workers that have kids and I even know sex workers' families where the kids are supporting their parents. So it can be amazing because it's all about communication. And with perception of porn and perception of sex work, the main problem, the biggest issue is like a French writer said, the hell is other people. And it's just, it's exactly that. It's other than that, we would be so happy and enjoy our work without shame.
Yeah,
exactly. It's the shame and the stigma. It's not the acts
from
themselves.
From everyone else.
So was that first shoot religiously charged or was it just you personally confronting your Catholicism in the shoot?
It was personal confrontation. Okay. And I think it was so intense because I didn't expect it, because I was so convinced that, oh, I packed it in a box. Yeah, so this journey into porn, starting from those like a little bit silly videos of girls without makeup having fun together.
Yeah.
Really helped me to explore my queerness. And yeah, I also had to confront some own prejudice and bias. And I realized, oh, I'm so gay. Like, it was a little bit of a newsflash. And I always tell people, porn is such an amazing area to explore your queerness, because there's no rejection in porn.
Yeah. Mm.
No co-performer gonna like see you on set and be like, ugh. No.
Yes.
Not today. And
such a good point.
Even more important, after the shoot, you won't hear from this person, okay, I cannot commit.
Like, it takes that pressure off.
It's without the baggage of the personal interactions. Yes. Yeah.
So soon after that, porn kind of replaced my intimate life. But I mean, it was so good, and that I just didn't want to go back to this civilians dating and all this bullshit that comes with it. It doesn't have to, but it come with it, you know?
It can, yeah.
Yeah.
So, because in porn, at least in my case, having to work with those European performers also, like some that you mentioned a lot on the podcast, they are all fantastic people that really are interested in your boundaries, your preferences. And I also realized that I was not so good before that either. I mean, I thought I'm a good lover, and that it's the lovers were sucking at it.
Yeah.
And that I gave my best, because I think I was quite obedient and giving. Mm. But I realized that I didn't really communicate properly either. And I did expect the magic to come to me.
Yeah, you weren't maybe advocating for your own pleasure.
Yeah, I think I was expecting, and then I was disappointed, and I was conditioned, like many also Polish people, and I think it could be present in other nationalities too, but especially with the religious background, to not talk about pleasure and to telepathically guess what the other person wants and to make it like film.
Yeah.
Like the sex was replaying of some mainstream cliches, and we should just all shut up and fuck.
Yeah,
and then no jokes either, and no noticing funny stuff.
Right.
So this really opened my head to also things that I could do better. And it was great, and still paid. So what else we can want? But at one point I wanted to go out of this frame of the natural girls, whatever, girls and boys and non-binary folks, and do something with more narration. And I did some little satires and porn with some comedic elements. And I started doing more experimental porn here in Amsterdam. I met other sex workers who were interested in creating audiovisual material, and we created the Amsterdam Queer Porn Collective. So within this collective, we created some films, and one of them got into many festivals, including Berlin Porn Film Festival. And I was already, when I was on set with, for example, X Confessions and other bigger companies, I was always taking notes and taking pictures of what kind of equipment they had, what kind of labs they were using.
Sure, yeah.
And this was this educational part of my job. And of course, there are lots of performers who are there just to perform. And then when they have breaks, they go on their phones, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I want to know. So it was all very handy. And then, and then I started doing things on my own and created some documentary that was about sexuality, but not not totally porn itself. And it did have a lot of reflection on religion and the impact of religion on our sexuality, on shaping of our sexuality and gender, and how we express it, or how this repression reflects on our communication with other people. Because it is so deeply rooted in our personality that we often are not aware of. But so then I realized I need to recycle this as well, because as much as shame is this ongoing theme of my life, I figured that there's also potential of using shame.
I was gonna say this is a great segue into nunsploitation,
which is today's topic,
which I think is a genre that's doing exactly that, right? It's like it's leveraging the repression. It's like there's heat in taboo. We talk about this on the show a lot, that like the more you repress something, the more you want to react against that. Yeah. And something as pervasive and powerful as the Catholic Church is incredibly present, even for those of us who aren't officially raised Catholic, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how you play with that and what intrigues you about nunsploitation.
So even before I started doing porn, I still have it, the little notebook that I was noting my experiences with different lovers and depending on their nationality and the religious impact. And I observed something funny, that people from countries like Germany, like the modern people who have no close ties to religion, they tend to approach sexuality more as a logical experience. So like sex is good if there is right speed, frequency, duration, if it's shaven, cleaner. So it's just their system of measuring, while for religious folks or folks from religious countries, it is more of a wild experience, and they tend to experience sex more intense because it's something forbidden. They didn't deserve pleasure. They should not even be here. This is like their last day on earth. Like, and it's not that one person is better lover than the other. Actually, both experiences are good. It's more about how intense is this experience. And this inspired me to really dive into it. What is the impact of shame? And maybe it can make this experience more interesting. So I do think shame can be useful in some way, because you don't take pleasure for granted. You know that it has a cost, so the pleasure is more precious. But this is just more of a theory, and I realize that I'm personally having a lot of strong feelings about the innocence and the lost innocence. That was my whole issue with becoming a porn star, that there is a lost innocence. But with the nunsploitation, I was heavily inspired by my favorite porn director, Valerian Borowczyk. He was a Polish artist who immigrated to France in the 70s, and he created these amazing films that they are not really, they go beyond porn. They are just dramas, surrealist, quite feminist films with amazing masterpiece porn scenes. David Lynch, actually, for David Lynch, it's like the idol. He is very much inspired. So it's like this hidden gem. And Valerian Borowczyk directed film Behind the Convent Walls, which is the best non-exploitation film, at least from 70s, that I watched. It's just so sucking you in, and it is building the story, because I realized porn also is effective when there is a good storytelling. When it doesn't start just from fast fucking. There could be fast fucking. I love fast fucking. People assume that I'm totally vanilla because there's a lot of cuddling in my in my films. But I'm like, yes, but it's about different flavors, you know? Sweet, sour.
Kinkiness can be quite sweet.
And it is irregular. Like, human sexuality is irregular and must be expressed in irregular ways. It's, and we dislike this limited definition of BDSM as well. So I wanted to dive into nunsploitation, and I was still using some opportunities given to me. So I was on the set of the feature film by a French Swiss director, and it was like an experimental, very long production, many weeks in the French countryside. And I did
rough life.
That was my confrontation with, okay, what it is actually to be an actor. And I'm like, it's a hard job. I was already an actress, but this is different. Porn usually is shot within one day, and that was many, many weeks of shooting. But the landscape, the location was so great, and there was also a chapel. And I always take my own equipment with me, so I use my breaks. Instead of relaxing, I went and I was setting quickly the cameras and shooting my own stuff using the medieval nun costume.
Ooh.
So it's also something that I find more interesting, because if you Google up nun porn or even nunsploitation, there's just a lot of cosplay.
Yeah.
And with all respect to cosplay,
yeah,
I don't think it has this power. If it cannot be polyester.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. I really agree.
You know, the elements, the details matter if you want to give this proper storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I also realized, yeah, this is the kind of films I want to create. Of course, it requires some budget. Mm-hmm. I mean, I make my films with almost no budget, and I also do everything. I set the cameras, I do the costumes and the editing.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of work, and I would benefit a lot from having some support with that.
Sure.
So whenever I have opportunity to have that budget, I use it. Mm-hmm. And then it is really good.
Yeah.
Really good films.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I'm also aware that I have this script for amazing nunsploitation film that is also science fiction.
Ooh. Oh, fun.
And it involves aliens.
Oh,
there's probably an audience for that. I feel like that's an intersection of a lot of things that people want to see.
If it's not, I will find it.
Yes. Before we go too much further, I wonder if we should define nunsploitation.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
For our audience a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, basically any exploitation film is trying to monetize a trend, right? Or monetize a culture through a kind of like B-level movie. Like that's what we think about it when we think about exploitation films, whether it's like
blaxploitation.
It is a genre. It's like subgenre of the exploitation genre that is typically involving Christian nuns living in convents. And a lot of those films also picture nuns from Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And this had its peak in 70s. Yes, this term is not only referring to porn. It's also films that are exploiting this topic. And they had big popularity in Italy because of Vatican. And in Spain as well, because those countries have
a high Catholicism, high rates of like very pervasive Catholicism majority in those countries. Yeah.
Fun fact that scientists found that people who are religious actually to watch a lot porn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably relative and changing, but this is something that I know from lived experience as well. It is like a cycle, you know, they watch, they sin, they go and confess, they sin again, so they can go to confess. It's
they clean the slate, they confess, they sin again. Yeah, exactly.
But it's sort of like the most distilled idea of like sexual repression from the church, you know?
Yeah.
Like, of course, like, I who hasn't thought, like, what are those nuns up to? You know what I mean? Like,
what's under that habit?
Like, what are they up to in there? Like, they're all just sitting there alone? Come on.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of, I don't know, in researching this episode, I was fascinated to know that a lot of it, there are some sort of like historical figures and like true stories that it's, you know, that they do get some of this
some of this has like origins in history.
I had
no idea about, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Nat, but our wonderful intern pulled some additional research for us. I had not heard of this fabled nun of Monza. This is 17th century, 14-year-old Mariana de Leyva, daughter of a powerful aristocratic family, was sent to live in a convent, continued an affair with her lover, had several children, or two children, and then when a nun at her convent threatened to expose she and her lover, they murdered her. Which is, I didn't know that that was like maybe an origin of some of the nunsploitation genres in and outside of porn.
And also Sister Benedetta Carlini.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys remember, a few years ago there was a Paul Verhoeven who did Basic Instinct and Showgirls. He made a movie about it was called Benedetta, and it was at like Venice and Cannes, and it was like another like erotic thriller. But it's based on a real nun, an Italian Catholic nun, who had like visions, and she had like a relationship with another sister, and said that it was this like demonic spirit that was coming into her and forcing her to do these things. Yeah.
Very handy excuse.
Yeah,
believable
exactly.
In the church. You know?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of the times those films are inspired by real stories. Also the film by Ken Russell, which is another director that I really like. He didn't really do porn, but he did some really campy, interesting films like Horror.
Oh, yeah.
About the life, like a day from a sex worker life. I mean, it's kind of grotesque, but at the same time, it's really, really good. And he made this film, Devils.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like a cult film.
Yeah.
Don't you know it?
I don't know it.
So, Devils is about like a presence of this handsome priest that just... creates a lot of chaos and uproar among the nuns. But it is more than that. But it's like a drama. And how those nuns are ready to do anything once they believe in this. So, there's a lot about also submission and dominance. And I think, but this film is like special. It's also about Catholic Church and the hypocrisy. But I really like that with most nunsploitation, this is also about a resistance and or like the rebel, because it is like a symbolic representation of going against the authority.
Yeah.
It's like a feminist gesture of opposing this subordination. So this is something what I find, I think personally, most interesting, and this is also why I like to watch nunsploitation, and I find it really hot. Because of this discovery of one's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the freedom is not such an obvious given thing. We need to believe in it. So this is what I love about those films. And there are some stories, including nuns, that are still untold, which very interesting, that I think I could take care of directly.
Yeah.
Once I find sponsoring. Because this is a tricky bit as much as there are companies who would be willing to produce interesting pitch. Nunsploitation is tricky because of the audience. It is a bit of a controversial take because it involves religion. And it's funny because we produce different films with some crazy fetishes and normalize them, and we are very body positive and sex positive about them. But still, religion is a tricky one, and there could be...
It's charged. When you come for the church, like, there's always going to be some blowback there. For sure.
And it could be just a risky business for the company to produce that. Well, let's see.
Yeah.
I will have actually conversation with the big producer. So maybe
we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
And if not, I will make it my mission to do it by myself.
There you go.
I love that.
Love that. Well, we'd love to talk more about your work. Let's take a quick break and then we can talk about a couple of your films on the other side.
Cool.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The other thing that I'll say that the Catholic Church has to offer is like really delicious iconography. Like there's some great aesthetics.
Oh my God. The costumes.
I love it.
Yeah.
The crosses.
Yeah. Which you beautifully incorporate in your work.
Yes.
I mean, I could say that with respect to Bliss and A Holy Tree, which are two short films that we watched of yours.
That you did everything for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like bravo.
Production design.
You know?
And it's, I guess you were telling us before the break that some of the costumes were borrowed from another production, or were both of these independently produced completely? Okay, got
it. It was borrowed because I was already on that set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do have costumes at home as well.
Yeah.
And I always redesign stuff myself as well. Like, mm-hmm. I like the original stuff. I mean, as good as it could be, you know? I mean, I do a lot of... I mean, majority of my clothing is vintage anyway, and like 70s.
Sure.
So, but this was basically the medieval costume that I thought it's going to be cool to use it anyway. And I did ask for permission. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yes, I used what I had on the set. And it was quite of a spontaneous production. Normally, I do the planning, mood board, script, and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it was more like, okay, so I have this afternoon free. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I was there with Bishop Black.
We're such a fan of him.
Yeah, we're such fans of Bishop.
Yeah.
Are they cool in real life?
Yeah.
Of course. Yes. Yes, they are really cool. And we are good friends for many, many years. And it is quite funny because we met, I think, about 12 years ago, and it was not in context of porn. Bishop was doing a performance, and they had like a laser sticking up his anus, and in a dark, it was like a museum space, it was like an art performance, and there was just like this laser going, and all my fellow, I was an art student at that time, not very great. I was drunk a lot, but whatever. Artist life.
Yes.
And they were all sitting in silence, just completely awkward and terrified. And once Bishop was close to me, I gave them a slap on the bottom. And my fellow students were, oh my God, Natalia, why you always have to do something like that?
Yeah.
You're impossible. But I just thought it was funny because it was breaking the seriousness. And and this is how we met, and we stayed in touch, and eventually we were working on films together, and we hang out together, and we are we are very close friends. And this also made me realize that you can have like friendships in porn that are quite hard to define. Like, there's sexuality and lots of tender, but there's no heaviness of a relationship. So, but that was, and creating those films was inspired by the situation there. And I'm often creating art. Also, I do photography based on something that really interests me here and then. So there was this tree that was 100 years old or longer, even older, I mean. And I know that this tree used to be a part of the kids' play. And the owner of this villa and this territory would tell me that as a kid, he would climb on the tree and they would just hide there and play this imaginary scenarios. And then I'm like, well, I'm gonna do that as well, just in an adult context. And I thought this is such a unique opportunity and something that just already creates this story in a way. And in this film, I wanted more to give the feeling of this awakening sexuality of a nun and the nature. So it's like connecting this overwhelming need of expressing oneself, but also be together with the nature, almost as, sex is a primal and natural thing. So
I love that.
I was going to say my favorite thing about both of these videos as Holy Tree and Bliss is that there's nothing sort of shameful about the sex itself, which is rare, I think, in like, you know, because a lot of people want to like lean in to like the shame or the repression in like nunsploitation or like religious porn videos. But I loved that it was sort of like spiritual, and which always makes me think like, wow, the church really missed an opportunity with like without like they could have, like, because sex and orgasms are so like, when you think of like awesome, like they are, you do get to like, I always call it like the sex dimension. Like you do go to like another state, like mentally, physically,
spiritual state.
Yeah, it's a spiritual state. And like the church really missed an opportunity instead of like, you know, they could have used that
as opposed to fight that and repress
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
They should produce porn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because it is sort of like, that's the closest I've ever felt to seeing God is like when I'm coming, you know? And so I really love that. I also like, there was another, I mean, just the opening shot of you in like in front of the tree with like the light moving across your face was just like stunning. Okay. I just thought it was a gorgeous shot. I loved also your glasses fell at one point and it was just really cute. And I thought, I love that you kept it in. And then also the contrast of leaving a habit on but being naked.
Yeah.
Is also like so important, I think.
Again, like keeping the props, the costumes of the thing that you are imploding, you know,
keeping
like
the context. Yes.
Yeah, like pulling the habit open, and not a polyester habit, by the way. Yes. I don't know what it was made of, but it looked like burlap. Like it looked like the real
real.
I'm not.
Yeah.
You know? But like pulling that open and like keeping that as an element of it. Like we love to see when people keep a little bit of clothes on or pull panties to the side, like fuck with urgency, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was especially useful here because it was like leaning into the actual motif of the whole film to leave it on, you know, like you're keeping the religion on, but violating it at the same time. It's hot. It was a really, really cool choice.
Thank you.
I also loved, one of my favorite parts was the foot, the shot of the foot, because I am someone who comes with their feet. Like my feet are, my toes are curling. They're, I'm like getting a Charlie horse. And I thought that was just sort of like a beautiful way of like, you know, we always talk about like what you're not seeing, you know, to show that as like the orgasm. I thought
that,
just,
that tension
smart.
Is like what titillates. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really smart. I really loved it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we just brought you on to compliment you. We really love your work.
And now also, and Bliss also. Yeah. Great. Perfect. just what we wanted. Bliss also. I mean, similar things. I mean, I loved that there was sort of, I mean, I don't know what like the intention was there, but my idea of like what the narrative is that like Bishop is some sort of like worker, you know, like working in the grounds, and like the interaction almost starts just pretty innocently. Like you don't assume like sex is going to happen. Like there is sort of like, you know, maybe he's praying, or maybe they're praying, they're kneeling, and you sort of approach them like a nun or a priest would, like, oh, like bless you, like in a blessing way, almost a blessing. And then again, like the sex act, like them going down on you and leaving like the clothing on.
Yeah.
And again, no
shame. It's
also
very worshipful. It also feels much like goddess or mother worship, which is extremely Catholic as well.
Yeah, I really, especially with Bliss. So this was always when you have another performer in film, there are more contexts and it's also about dynamic and
relationship and
and this cannot be random. It's like everything means something. So with this film, I didn't want to have only one possible interpretation, because I really like the audience to be able to tell that story in their way. Basically, I wanted to play with some stereotype where usually the man of color is the one who is seducing and overpowering white woman. And I mean, I wanted to flip it, and I really like to just not play into people's expectations, but actually play with those expectations and actually show that the power dynamic can be very relative, and there's no point in assuming who seduced who. I think I think in this film, it is clear that it's coming from both, but it's still the nun takes some initiative and, yeah, she's not the passive, submissive object. So, yeah, it is. There is always a little bit about the power dynamic that I want people to rethink and not just the things that they always watch. And ultimately, I wanted to be also about good sex. And we decided, I mean, full penetration would be tricky in these circumstances. But I also realized, like, yeah, people always expect the porn to have this the same structure. It starts from blowjob, then it's penetration.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. Yeah.
And I was laughing when I heard you making fun of this because this was something that I always found so boring. And
it's very played
out. Sexuality is not like that. And sexuality is really something more than penetration. And yeah, I wanted to show that, yeah, the sex can be expressed in different ways and also each is valid and very powerful.
And there doesn't always need to be an orgasm.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, I'm kind of person that, so this is something that I just do. I it's not obligatory and I don't expect this from every co-performer. But when I started doing porn, I also figured that, okay, I'm going to have real orgasms because first of all, we are spending like 8 or 12 hours on set naked. And what, we're going to just pretend? Like, and then I'm going to get home all horny and tense and then masturbate? It just doesn't make sense so much. So I kind of trained myself to also make myself available for that. It's I always tell people because they're like, yeah, but this is like, there's camera and there's time pressure. You can train everything.
Yeah, I mean. That makes sense because I had to train myself to be vulnerable enough to have orgasm during sex. You know, like I discovered that through masturbation. So like doing that with someone witnessing it was something that was like tricky for me as an adult, like coming into my own sexual comfort, you know? So I imagine similarly, like you can become comfortable with the cameras. You can choose to be like, how do I find my presence? How do I find my vulnerability in order to like really engage in this as opposed to perform it, you know? And I know that's every performer's choice, that not a lot of performers do it that way. But
yeah,
it's fascinating to hear that you do.
And it's not always something that easy, but I think it also assures audience that, they are not doubting my orgasm. Also because, and I like to emphasize that the real orgasm is not, usually it's not that pretty. It's,
exactly.
We talk about this a lot, you know?
It's not when your face looks, you know, sexy. And but I do think we need to normalize that because people then get surprised when they have sex and they see someone having real orgasm and they are terrified. And
or terrified of themselves, like scared to be anything but like perfect and performative and pretty, you know?
Yeah.
Which is silly. Well, should we talk briefly about possession as well before we wrap up the episode?
Because
I love this too. Yeah.
Yeah. I love this because, you know, and we didn't really talk about this earlier, but like, there's also the idea that like sex is like representing like the devil or like, you know, like it's like something else that's that is responsible for like this, the sexuality. And I really loved this video. It's called Possession. It's on Alt Shift. We found it on Pink Label. And it is sort of like a horror-esque nunsploitation. And there's this great, like, it starts with like, you know, I was reading into this, but it had like a 1970s vibe, you know, like it was a different time. Like this is again, like peak nunsploitation.
Hint of like the exorcism aesthetic, you know, like there's a lot of films we could reference that have that retro Catholic.
Right. Or the idea of like finding recordings of like someone else who this has like previously happened to is also like, you know, has such
leans into the horror aspect,
the horror of it, that like there was previously like, you know, you're finishing the research of this other nun and you get the recordings and this other nun is talking about how, you know, she found this book and like the images in this book are like haunting her. And basically then this demon comes and possesses you. And I loved it. I loved the idea of it like shooting through the woods, the spirit like flying in, taking over your body. And the striking image of like eyes being rolled back into the head, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say like the image of possession that like looks like mm-hmm. the image of
coming
sexual ecstasy. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
It's parallel.
Yeah, I am someone who when I come, like my eyes are rolling in the back of my head, yeah. you know? So, and like the idea of like writhing. There were so many things about it that I loved. Like the dress popping open, like something pulling your panties, like the white, like kind of virginal panties down, and like the cross sort of like there was like a cross, like your necklace like falling across your body, like almost like getting tight across your throat, like it was like rejecting the religious, you know, that's on your person. Yeah, it just reminded me. I remember seeing this show at the Box here in New York of like this it was like a nunsploitation show where like this nun was getting like possessed, and she like fucked herself on stage with a crucifix that had a dildo on the end. Yeah. And it was like a demon. Yeah, it was incredible.
That
like, you know,
so
it was
good.
Like she like squirted it. It was great.
Yeah. We have a friend who does some nun play at a sex party, like a big sex party in New York and Los Angeles as well. It's a really cool genre.
That's really good. I want to know. Yeah, I will ask later about this.
But yeah, I just loved like the contortions of the body, like, you know, like the writhing, and when you do come, like there's like almost like a look of like fear, like confusion that I can relate to as someone who like I'm like, what's happening, you know?
Yeah, but that also leans into the idea that this would be like someone who wouldn't understand those feelings and be overwhelmed by that, which is hot in itself. Again, it like leans into the taboo. Yeah, so all around,
and then also
fucking hot.
Also the demon then like leaves your pussy like after you come, it like shoots back into like, you know, I loved that.
Also shooting process was so amazing because I really love working with Altshift.
That's great to know.
People who run this, it's a small company, and but they do work for another companies, and it's the same team, and they are my favorite people to work with. They are based in UK, so it is tricky for me to for example collaborate with them on a regular basis, but when they offered this to me, I was like, it's just like, you know, what I've been up to, because we just finished filming this this long feature experimental film where I'm playing a nun as well. So I was like, I think this is like the theme that's
going
to be.
You're on a nun trip.
Like it's following me. It was just so also so easy because they're very, really great producers, and they can write really good scripts, and everything was just very pleasant because they knew what they were doing. And this is something that I miss in a lot of like collaborations with, let's say, fellow performers. Yeah. And this is also why I'm not really going for like content creation much.
Yeah.
And not because I find, it could be probably also beneficial financially, but I like interesting projects.
You have artistic sensibilities and curiosities. Yeah,
I love
that. It
can be also ridiculous. It doesn't have to be the arty project, but it needs to have something interesting for me to dive in, to spend time for. Yeah. And sometimes it's really not about money. Like this was just very, there was a very modest budget, but I would totally go for it again.
Yeah.
And we shot it actually after another big production. It was just something to do at the end before wrapping everything.
Oh, nice. So good.
And I remember that the person who is in this production helped me to apply lenses because I never done that in my life before. It was almost like girls time, like pajama party, but just a bit more crazy. And the shooting was so fun, and the ideas they got to make it supernatural, like the opening of the dress, there were like this. I'm not gonna spoil it because I want people to feel excited watching it.
It's so hot.
It's a very hot film.
And I think the best is that I like to take part in those projects, and I rarely watch my films like immediately after they are released, because for me, mm-hmm. it's more about the experience that I had and being something like really great and pleasant. And surprisingly, this film got some awards and also the Math Magazine award for the best porn film. Yeah, so it was a surprise because it is amazing, but I just didn't think that so many people will be that pleased. So that was such a nice surprise and such a good thing for Altshift. And they deserve a lot of attention because they do some really, really cool stuff. And they're really ethical. They are treating performers the best, and they give the least stress, because working in porn is ultimately stressful.
It can be stressful.
You need to be on schedule, and you need to reply to emails, and sometimes one production can require like 35 emails and this is just like 1 week. And you have to be on your phone all the time. You have to go get tested, and I mean, but this have to be done. Like, you need to give up other things to do it. But with Altshift, this is always, they manage somehow to make it just smooth. Everything is there as well, but so I really wish to have more projects like offered to me that are in this horror sci-fi manner. There's not much of this in porn, I feel like. Like this, there's a lot of queer, and there's a lot of arty or like glamour, stylish porn. But I haven't seen much horrors.
Which is crazy, because we talk about how in horror films, it's like the same.
So sexually charged.
Yeah.
Like very.
You're like, what happens in your brain, you know?
Yeah, the pleasure centers are adjacent. Yeah,
adrenaline. It's the same area. Exactly. So it was such a pleasure. And it's also inspiring you to, you know, okay, there is not much of this kind of porn. Let's make it. You always need to be like exploring this on your own then, because people will follow eventually.
Yeah.
And I really wish performers and producers were more brave in this choice of topics and scripts, because I feel like a lot of companies still play safe to please their subscribers and to keep keep that base of subscribers, which makes sense from the business standpoint. But it also is raising the possibility of getting the new base of followers, subscribers.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I think religious people are the potential.
That's something to tap into for sure. Thank you so much for being here, Nat. This was a fascinating conversation, and we love to like peek behind the curtain and hear about the work and how it's made. Yeah. And we love to hear that you have good experiences with companies that we champion here. So that's wonderful. What do you want to plug? Where can people find you?
Or find
what
your work.
What are you pointing people to these days?
So I just want to mention regarding my work that nowadays I actually work also at a nonprofit organization where I'm doing other than the activism stuff for sex worker rights. I also do tours for Red Light District.
Oh, hell yeah.
And this is from Prostitution Information Center in Amsterdam. And this is also funny because the Red Light District is, and our place is just in front of the church. There are sex workers and the church. And this is interesting because a lot of people get shocked by this presence, this proximity, and then ask me like, who allows that? Like, why is it here with those women? Yeah. And I tell them that, well, this is pretty simple. The church is, manufacturing the guilt and shame, and sex workers are utilizing it. So it's working perfectly together.
Yeah.
So this is something also I do, and people can come and get information and also participate in the tours. Other than that, I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram as Nat Portnoy, and on Instagram there's also a link to my link tree that lists all the other 600 things that I do. And there are, my films are also on Pink Label, so if people click on my link from that link tree, they also support me by buying the films there. So
fabulous.
I encourage.
Wonderful.
And I really would like people to first of all enjoy themselves.
Yes. Love that.
Right.
Thank you so much again, Nat.
I know. Thank you for coming on.
This is wonderful.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Girls on Pern, on Twitter for as long as it lasts at GOP the Podcast, our website girlsonporn.com, and on patreon.com/girlsonporn.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. And hey, if you want to leave us a little cheeky 5-star review, we get a lot of sex negative reviews out there because we're two girls talking about porn. So every 5-star review goes a long way to us.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that's actually any good.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.